When I was about 13 or 14, Rick Bryant, actually, a friend of the family, sort of just said, do you want to play the saxophone? And I said, yeah, okay, not knowing what a saxophone looked like or sounded like. And he just got me into playing it. He lent me his alto, and I started playing that, and it was a kind of point of difference, you know, like not many people played the saxophone, so I was quite proud of the fact that I was doing it. Rick Bryant was a bit of a mentor to me and quite a few people, really. Like, he got people, you know, playing music and listening to music, which was good. So I was actually at Wellington High at the time. For the sixth form year, I was asked to leave Wellington High, which is my claim to street cred. So I went to Onslow College, and that's where I met the guys that became the Rodents and the Hoolamen and stuff. And they were just into the same kind of music, you know, soul and all that sort of thing. And so it was coincidence that I happened to know Rick and all that, you know. But yeah, we used to go along to Rough Justice gigs and just, you know, be amazed.
When I'm with you, woman, I tell you, heart beats hot and strong. When I'm with you, just want to hold.
Being the youngest in a big family, I had older siblings who were like listening to, you know, Bob Dylan and Stones and all that sort of stuff. So I was kind of into music. It was around that time, that around the sixth form time, I started getting into black music, you know, soul and R&B and stuff. Like the usual suspects, you know, Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin and Wilson Pickett and the better known ones. Then you start kind of, you know, getting into some obscure stuff. King Curtis was a big, big influence for me because he was Aretha Franklin's band leader and sax player for quite a while, and such fantastic playing, you know. The great soul sax player.
Now beat well.
Guys that I met up with, John McDougall and Andrew Cross and guys like that, they were all sort of playing and jamming and writing songs. I think the first question John said to me was, what kind of music do you like? And I said, the Rolling Stones. He didn't mention anything else. That said it all for me. I was one of those purists. If you didn't listen to the Stones, you just didn't know about rock and roll, you know. Thing about Stones is they had Bobby Keys playing sax. He's the rock and roll sax player, as opposed to King Curtis being soul. You know, so I used to think the best saxophone solo on a rock and roll record ever was, in fact, there's two of them. It's all on, both on one song on Exile on Main Street. There's a song called "Rip This Joint," and it's just phenomenal. You know, it's just the most fantastic rock and roll. You know. I was trying to get a sound that's somewhere between those two, you know, raucous but sort of melodious at the same time. So, yeah, we started jamming and around Andrew Cross's parents' place down the basement there, and we're into the same things, you know, rock and roll and soul, basically. Isley Brothers and stuff like that, you know, and just anything. And the Clash, and this is 1979, you know, it's a fair bit going on musically. John Nyland, the piano player, he was pretty bent. And John McDougall, you know, the songwriter. People like Chris Green went on to hook up with Mike Russell and the Newton Hoons. Great horn section, they were really good. There were a lot of singers, but the main one was Peter Marshall. He was into the Brian Ferry sort of side of things too, you know. Dressing up, he always looked good, you know, pretty suave.
I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour. That's when my love comes tumbling down.
was The Rodents. Don't ask me where that name came from, but it seemed to be having voted for. Did our first public gig at a place called Thistle Hall, top of Cuba Street. And that was like a party that we organised, you know, had a few other bands playing. Punk was big, yeah, and boot boys were everywhere. And they used to go along to gigs. Sort of strange. They'd pay the good money to get in, and they'd just sort of yell at you and say you're crap and how bad the music was and throw their beer at you. And you know, that was their way of having a good time, you know. And so they were into this horrible punk music, and we were trying to play soul music. And it was like the, you know, real clash of gangs going on. Undertone of violence there, too, because the, you know, skinheads were the guys that took punk seriously, and you know, if you'd cross one of them, you'd like to get a knife in your back, sort of thing. So you had to be careful. How come it always happens to me? I'm the one who has our misery. Most of us were still only 17 in the Rodents, so we weren't legally supposed to be playing in pubs. Every time we played at the Terminus, we'd have to post somebody down at the front door downstairs, and when the cops arrived, you know, the riot squad, because, you know, it was a band playing, so they'd send the riot squad out. Somebody would run upstairs and tell me, and I'd sort of put my horn down and run around the back and hide, you know, until they'd gone, sort of thing. I went off and started playing with Rick's band, The Neighbours, up in Auckland, and then I think what happened was I came back to Wellington and replaced Chris Green. They were already kind of the Hula Men by then, but I sort of, you know, joined later on, you know, a few months later or something, you know. Yeah. Working for a living, taking but no giving. There is a tradition of R&B bands in Wellington. At the time, we weren't conscious of it that much. Going and seeing Rough Justice play all the time, that was just R&B soul, you know. And going back from there, you can see other bands too, you know, like the stuff that went before then, Blurter and all those sort of guys. I guess we were part of that tradition. Working for a living. Taking, but no giving. Beer and Skittles was the EP by the now legendary Hula Men. We were listening to everything that was going on, so we were sort of... And with a big band, you know, everybody's got their own little bit to put in. John was really into reggae, John McDougall, so he was writing sort of ska feels and stuff like that, you know. Like, working for a living, real ska and barking up the wrong tree, you know. So I was trying to be as raucous as I could in the true R&B tradition, you know, try and get the fattest, most sort of raspy, raucous sound, play as loud as you could. I was starting to hear more of the sort of swing R&B players, you know, from the 50s, you know, the guys who sort of died of brain hemorrhages because they were competing to see how loud they could play, you know, those sort of blokes. I wasn't trying to be sort of delicate or subtle or anything like that, you know. A lot of it's just blowing really hard, you know. It's like having a guitar amp. If you turn it up real loud, you'll get a certain kind of sound. Quietly, you'll sound different, you know. And, you know, it's the kind of reed you use, you know, a good hard reed and your embouchure and stuff, you know. And the technical things like, you know, you kind of hum a note at the same time as you're playing, you get this real buzzy sound happening, you know. It's kind of like a kazoo, you know. I decided I'd go and see what Auckland was all about. And go up there for a while, and I guess Dave Dobbin had been looking for a saxophone player, and somehow, you know, I just got a call from someone, a friend of a friend, and went along, did an audition, and yeah, got the part. it's a real rock gig. I mean, I remember the first couple of nights playing with Dave Dobbin's guitar amp about 3 feet from my ear, and I just, you know, I just couldn't hear for days. I had to, you know, tell him to move it, put it somewhere else, put me somewhere else. You know, it was just so loud, you know. So I wasn't used to that.
Hey, good evening, love. How's your day? Bringing you the weather from the satellite jigsaw. Today was fine. Tears of time. The week with your pressure from the hinter to the heart. Man knows what it is.
I had a few big tours with those guys. Yeah, the beach tour. We were driving back to Thames, I think, or Waihee, from a gig in Whangamata, 3 o'clock in the morning, driving about 50 miles an hour on a country dirt road, and just drove into a bank, basically. Very lucky not to be killed by that one. It was pretty bad, you know, like I came to, you know, tangled up in the steering wheel on, you know, this old E.H. Holden. It's a good thing we're in a solid car, we probably wouldn't be here. And I sort of woke up and climbed out, and there was Lyle lying in a pool of blood in the middle of the road, you know. I was sitting there guarding him just in case a car came around the corner and ran him over, you know. It was pretty sick. We were in hospital overnight sort of thing, but Lyle came off a hell of a lot worse than I did. He ended up with a fractured skull, and, you know. For a couple of days afterwards, I felt like, you know, nothing's going to happen to me. I don't have to wear a seatbelt. And then, like, 2 days later, suddenly, bang, with shock. Shit, I could have died there, you know. And you suddenly realise just how mortal you are. Yeah. We went to Sydney and did the Australian circuit, you know, up and down the East Coast, and, you know, you'd play some huge room 3 hours drive out of Sydney, and you'd be playing to three people who didn't have a clue who you were. And we were doing a lot of that, you know, just quite hard work, basically. A lot of driving, a lot of playing to, you know, real small crowds. And, of course, we'd run out of money, so we'd come back to New Zealand, do a big, you know, final tour of New Zealand, make a bit of cash, go back to Sydney. We did that about three times, if I can remember.
Just wanna scream and holler, yeah. Just wanna scream, yeah. Take back those tears, turn your head around.
I remember turning 20 somewhere in the van on the Hume Highway, sort of 4 hours out of Melbourne, you know, middle of the night, middle of winter, thinking, what am I doing here? I mean, the thing about horn sections in this country is that, you know, the sheer economics of it are that you don't have big horn sections because you can't afford to pay that many guys, you know. If money's tight, the first guy who get out of the band is the horn player. I should have taken up guitar when I was 13. After the last Dee Smash gig, I went back to Wellington and played with the Pelicans. I think it was about 84, and that's when I did The Bag. The Bag was just a three-track EP that I decided I had to make because I'd gone around telling everybody I knew that, oh, one day I'm going to make a solo record, you know. And so, because I told everybody that, I just had to do it, you know. So I just picked three tunes that I liked, arranged them, got the Pelicans to be the rhythm section, and the damn good rhythm section, and got Ian Morrison to produce and engineer and stuff, yeah. I was sort of thinking, you know, nobody's done an instrumental rock record in this country before. Why not do it, you know? We'll be right back. record actually kind of worked well, apart from two things. The tracks were too long, and the sax playing is really bad. Slowly but surely evolved into a band called the Holidaymakers, who started off just doing a lot more of John's original stuff as well as covers. We picked a tune that happened to be one that always went down well, and it was a cover, you know, it was a soul cover, a Bill Withers tune, and turned it into a duet because that was, you know, the thing to do at the time. There were lots of duets in the top 20, so, you know, we worked out the arrangements between us. Barbara Griffin had a big part of that. She was the keyboard player. And then made a video. Fane Flores directed it. It was a bloody good video, good song, put it all together, and eventually, you know, goes to number one. I stayed there for 6 weeks, I think it was, yeah. We did a tour, summer tour, on the back of one song. Made a bit of cash, managed to buy my first car, a 65 Valiant. And you don't get rich and famous, you know, especially when it's not your own song. The B-side was a really good song of John McDougall's called Sensible Shoes. I was quite proud of the song too, because it was something that we put together. It wasn't trying to be a commercial success, but it just works as a song, and it's a really good tune, you know, from A to B to C to the ending. And I quite like the horn arrangements that I wrote for it. I started playing with Darren Watson and Richard Tione's cover band, The Hot Leftovers, doing, you know, just doing the pubs, you know. That was playing when Smoke Shop wasn't playing, and we were just jamming and playing together, and then Smoke Shop started recording an album called So Glad.
No, I'm glad I left you.
after playing with Smoke Shop, I went up to Auckland and I was doing some gigs with Ted Clark, actually, doing a lot of Blues Brothers material, and he had a kind of Latin section to it too, you know, and him and his Elvis Presley imitation, you know, that sort of thing. You know, he always had hot players in his band. And yeah, we sort of toured, and you know, this is one of the advantages of being a musician, one of the few, is that you get to go to places like Taipei and, you know, Penang and stuff, you know, and somebody else pays the ticket. Well, you've got to be adaptable, really, and you've got to be able to get a different kind of sound for whatever the tune is that they want, you know. So if you have to, you can sort of sound a bit like Stan Getz, and if you have to, you can sound like whoever, you know. I was in Sydney for a few of the 90s with this band that was called The Comets, a lot of Louis Jordan sort of stuff, you know. Stuff that's become a real cliche, actually, and I've vowed never to ever play Caledonia ever again, or Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens, you know. But that was a good band, actually, because they played a lot of country swing too. It was kind of, you know, that's rock and roll, you know. You put a saxophone in a country band and you've got a rock and roll band, so, you know. As a matter of fact, I haven't done a gig in about 2 years, and that's because I'd just been, you know, doing nothing but playing music in loud bands for 20 years, you know, I was starting to go deaf, basically. So, you know, getting tinnitus and, you know, losing the sort of desire to play, really. So I've had 2 years not playing the sax, just playing a bit of guitar with John McDougall. If I ever get lucky, that'll be a big surprise. In fact, just about now is the time I've decided, right, I've got to start doing it again, because especially having seen that documentary about the Motown players, and it was just so powerful and just so amazing, you know, to see these guys, you know, talking about the music they made and just realising the strength of music in itself, you know, and what it does for you, you know, how good it is for your soul and how it keeps you young, and it's just it's just an amazing thing, music. But, I mean, I put a Stones record on and had a couple of beers and played along on the saxophone like I used to do when I was 13 the other day. It was good. It was really good.